Hey everyone, how you going? It's Nelly here. Happy New Year to you. Don't know where that came from. Hey, we at the Dear Nelly team hope 2024 is full of love and adventure and rest and all the things, whatever that looks like for you. And thank you again for your continued support for this funny little podcast. Now, we've got some very exciting news. We have another live show coming up. This one is on Thursday, the 8th of February at the Malthouse Outdoors at the iconic Malthouse Theatre in Melbourne as part of their annual podcast season where they showcase the best podcasts around. I am thrilled to confirm that the lineup includes me, obviously, hosting. We also have comedian, author, and broadcaster Sammy Shah. Jesus, he's funny. He's so great on radio. He's so great at all the things. Some of you may know him from The Australian Story on ABC, which featured the incredible tale of him and his now wife, academic Kylie Moore Gilbert, who was sentenced to 10 years in an Iranian prison, but thankfully made it home. What a love story. We also have comedian and Dear Nelly favourite, the incomparable Kirsty Wiebeck, who also happens to be one of my strawberriest of strawberry friends, and I know you all adore her. And last but not least, oh my God, we have comedian and actor Lizzie Hu. Lizzie bloody Hu. She's on all the comedy specials, on all the streaming services, and no doubt she's one of the hottest bloody comedians going around. Now, I mean hot as in popular, but you know, you go with whatever. So look, I urge you to get in and book tickets via the Malthouse website or my website at nellythomas.com, and of course there are links in the show notes. Couple of other quick reminders, keep your calls coming. If you can, join Patreon or Acast Plus for $5 a month for bonus episodes and other rewards. This year, paid subscribers will get live Zoom events with me throughout the year where we can do Q&As and interact. Now, this podcast was recorded in the council area known as Darabin in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri peoples of the Kulin Nation, and pay my respects to their elders past, present, and emerging. Last but not least, some things don't change, Moles. This is a sex, dating, and relationships podcast for adults. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shit. So off your fuck.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly. When you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
All right, welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. And today we are joined by, what a delight, it is Van Badham.
Oh my God, I'm sorry about all the pre-podcast chat. I just had to get it all out of my system.
Oh no, we're going over it again.
I'm loving it. I am absolutely loving it. Can I just say, if you're listening to this and not seeing it, it's Nelly's beautiful face. It's the glow. You're just like, I would tell you anything.
It's the menopausal glow that elicits confessions from people.
Yeah, whereas I've just got the perimenopausal frizz, as you can no doubt tell from my hair.
Now, of course, darling Van, I know who you are, but can you introduce yourself? Because as with many of my guests, you are so multifaceted that I dare not try and summarize you in a sentence.
So who the hell are you? I love how that's the reality of making a living in anything related to arts or media
Yeah.
in this country, is you've got to be multifaceted or you will not earn enough money to live. So I am primarily known as a columnist for The Guardian, and I've
Yes.
actually been there for 10 years, which I find
Wow.
unbelievable. Yeah, 10 years. 10 years.
Amazing. Congrats.
So I write opinion, as you'll understand very quickly,
Yeah.
is a forthright individual. But I was recruited for my job at The Guardian back in the day, doing various weird forms of obscure feminist stand-up comedy,
Yes.
which is not something I've ever done particularly successfully, apart from that one night. That
Yeah.
one night, I was genuinely funny and got the gig. So
Love
that's
it.
good. I am a playwright. That's what
Yes.
I'm trained in doing. I have studied to be a playwright longer than people train to be brain surgeons.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that it doesn't command the same level of cultural heft as you get
Yes.
being a brain surgeon, and because your job is to bring joy. You
Yeah.
know, I think it's just as worthwhile as having your brain fixed as
Yeah.
having 2 hours where you can just sit in a room full of strangers and have a good time. So I've got a
Of
big
course
show.
it is. If I were actually going to, if I had taken the reins and introduced you, I would have put playwright first because that's how I was introduced to you and your work. And I agree, like if we learn nothing in COVID, it's how important the arts were. Where who did we turn to for comfort?
Yeah, can I say it was a very tough time for theatre people? Because
Sure
theatre
was.
people are about the people.
Yeah.
We're people people.
Yeah.
And suddenly having no people was rough. It
Yeah.
was really rough. But yeah, so I have a big show coming up at the Sydney Theatre Company that opens
Amazing.
on the 6th of February, called A Fool in Love, which is a farce.
Yes.
And let me tell you, it takes a lot of time and effort to pull out some really cheap laughs. And then in July and August, I'll be in Adelaide because I've written a musical
Yes, you have.
called The Questions, which is a rom-com musical with my beautiful musical partner, Dr. Richard Wise.
Amazing.
And yeah, and I'm doing other things, like I'm writing for TV. I have a show in development, which is very exciting. And
Ooh.
I'm writing a new book. I did a book a couple of years ago called QAnon and On, A Short and Shocking
Yes.
History of Internet Conspiracy Cults. Which was just about crazy people on the internet and how they're
Yeah.
really dangerous. Oh my God, they are so
Wow.
dangerous.
Who knew? And Van, can I just say, I wish you'd made something of your life. You
Yeah,
know, like
I do a podcast
you
with my
do.
beautiful husband Ben called The Week on Wednesday, and I do something else, but I can't remember what it is. I mean, I do a bunch of stuff.
You do stuff everywhere all the time, and all of the things that you've listed, I will put in the show notes and on our social media. And particularly, can I say, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I found doing live shows, you know, we're not post-COVID, but let's just use that terminology, has been a lot more difficult. People book very late, or they don't book at all. Please go to the live shows, support your live artists, support your playwrights, your comedians, your dancers, your whoever, because we need it.
Oh, look, it's only in the past couple of months that anything has felt sort of normal again.
Yeah, ish.
Like, I mean, I've been going back to the theatre for the past, what, 18 months,
Yeah.
and it was tense. Like, it was
Yeah.
tense going in the beginning. Because none of us were, it was like, are we all right? Are we
Yeah.
safe? How many injections do you need? Are we
Yeah.
okay? Like,
Yeah.
and there were theatre companies that were just plagued with rolling cycles of COVID infection. It's been a really hard time, but I
Really
feel
rough.
like we're getting to the other side. And I start rehearsals next week for my Sydney show. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Like, it's just being with my peeps, doing my thing in this
How long's
room.
it on for, Van?
It's a long season. It's like 5 weeks. It might even be
Five
6 weeks.
weeks in Feb.
Starts in Feb, so previewing on the 6th of February, and then it runs until the end of March.
I tell you what, I'm going to fly to Sydney. I'm going to come and see it when you're there and we're having dinner.
I'm so into it. I'm
Done.
totally. And
Done. We're
if
doing
you're
it.
listening to this and you come to my show and you see me, say hi. It's
Yeah,
always
for
very weird
sure.
when people sort of eyeball you across the room and you're like, do
Yeah.
I owe you money? Like,
Yeah.
yeah, just say, please say hi,
Well,
please.
my listeners know when I do live shows, like I'm one of those weirdos. I really love interacting with the audience. Like I'm there at least an hour or sometimes 2 hours before, happy to have a chat. You're the same. Like you're a people person. Come and say hi. If you're a hugger, ask for a hug. all the rest of it. Like it's part of the experience, I think.
Yeah, and like the experience, the reason why I love being a theatre person is there's something that very special that happens if you're in a room full of strangers having a shared experience.
Yes.
Like it changes your relationship to everybody else in that room because whoever you are and wherever you've come from, you will have something in common at the end of 2 hours. And it's quite a beautiful and special bond, especially if you've had like a big night of laughing or a big night of crying. You know, it's something that you've got forever. And other people who've had that experience, you have that bond with them. And it's important. That's why
It's an
we invented the theatre.
energetic, it actually is a relationship.
Yeah.
It actually is an energetic exchange in the room. Now, I want to take you to a recent post of yours, and you and I have discussed this off the podcast before, but I absolutely loved the crystallization of you talking about your lovely partner, Ben. And essentially, the way I read it was a call to women to say, like, don't accept less because you think, well, I'm nearly 30 and I need to be married, or I'm nearly 35 and I need to find someone, or whatever. You were giving Ben as an example of why it is essential to wait, like for the right person. Have I summarized that correctly?
Well, yeah. I mean, Nelly, this is going to be, it might be a surprise to some of the men who abuse me on the internet, but probably not a surprise to any woman in their 40s. But I've been around, you know, I've had adventures, some of which were very
Sure.
exciting, some of which were less so. But I never settled down, didn't have the, oh my God, I'm not married at 30 panic. I certainly had the, I don't have babies at 35 panic, which is slightly different. But I had been in relationships, one with an absolutely wonderful man, like a prize, a prince of a human who was really smart, really kind, really good, lovely family, and who asked me to marry him, and something in me just went, no, you can't. You're just not, that's not where
What
it's
was it
going.
in you, do you think?
Look, I don't know. I think we were, with that relationship in particular, I think we had been living together for some time and I adored this man. He was, you know, we were university boyfriend and girlfriend. We met through student activism. We were both really committed environmentalists. You know, he was the one who put when the cops dislocated my shoulder at a demo, he was the one who popped it back in.
Oof.
And yeah, hot, right? And
Oof.
he was just a thoroughly good person and I loved his family as my own. But we had a sort of lot, we called him the lodger, this really good friend of ours from uni who was slightly older. He had been living in a granny flat under one of the crazy houses in Wollongong that we lived in, and we really loved him. And he had been my boyfriend's flatmate before and had broken up with his girlfriend, and that household broke up. And we moved to a new house, and we had a room for this friend. And he was like, yeah, I'll probably bring my stuff round on the weekend. And because he was always at his girlfriend's, so he was the lodger. And you'd see him for like 2 hours painting the nude, and then he'd go. And he was quite an extraordinary person. Anyway, he died of a brain hemorrhage just before he moved in. And I was 26, and my partner was 28. And it sounds like that's not a big difference, but it actually was. And when Mark died, I was like, what have I done with my life? Like, I live in Wollongong. Wollongong's awesome. Like, don't get me wrong, it's always going to be my spiritual home. It's the most beautiful place in the world. But I was like, I've done these degrees, and what do they mean? Like, what am I doing? And, you know, I've been telling everybody for years I want to be a famous playwright, but, you know, I work for local council and I'm just here. And
So there
I
was
just,
like a there was a reckoning, and I
yeah. And
think a death does that.
yeah. And my boyfriend had won a PhD scholarship, and he was a really, really bright man. And he was certainly on a trajectory. And he was like, we could buy this house, we could settle down, you know, that's all on the table. And his parents had married young as well, which I think was a big influence on him. Whereas my parents had married later in the 70s, 30 was like, oh my God, so old. Can you imagine getting married at 30 in the 70s? But I just went, no, I can't. There's a big world out there. And I won a scholarship to do an exchange semester at the University of Sheffield in the UK. And I went, I'll be back in 6 months. And I didn't come back for 10 years. And I knew it. And that death had, there was like a real turning point in my life because Mark was so talented and he was a visual artist. He'd started off as a banker and he had quite conservative parents and he sort of pursued what they wanted. And then he had his moment of clarity and went, I'm an artist. I'm going to art school. And he was art school. Like he was the painting in the nude through the best art student party I've went to, which was a 70s party. And he went as Brett Whiteley and the fog machine blew up and like everything was awesome. And he was doing really well. And his art was being bought for big collections and big galleries. And it was all about to happen. And then it was over. And I was like, life is not about waiting for a life. Life
No.
is about the active.
It's that
And
conscious. I mean, I love two things about this. I mean, of course, I'm sorry for that loss, and I can tell it still hurts as it does when you lose someone special. But two things I love about it. One, the respect with which you talk about that partner, because I think one of the narratives in the ether that we need to entrench more is that you can leave someone that you loved. It doesn't
yeah.
have to be that they were a terrible person. It doesn't have to be a failure. It doesn't have to be that you're a terrible person. It can just be, it just wasn't right. And I knew it wasn't right.
Well, I don't come out of this story entirely covered in glory because I came back from England after a while, and we hung on. Like we stayed together with me doing 9 months in the UK, then 3 months at home. And he eventually went, I can't do this anymore. And he ended it. And I had the full-on heartbreak, nervous breakdown about it. But I mean, I had already said no to marrying him. Like, what did I think? I mean, I was, but to be fair, we were young. We were very young. And I came back to Australia and said, we should get back together. And he said, if we do, you'll resent me for the rest of my life. You
Oh,
will.
clever boy.
Absolutely will. And it was true. And I think, you know, my heartbreak was about appreciating him because he was great. But, you know, it's actually okay. To break, it's okay to break up. And the one thing I have learned in my life is there's no such thing as a bad breakup. There isn't. There are better and worse ways of dealing with it. But, you know, he ended up partnered with the right person. She's lovely. They have great kids. His career went in an unexpected direction, as it turned out. But we're really good friends now. Like,
Lovely.
you know, and he. I respect his choice of partner and he respects mine, and that's a really beautiful thing.
That's lovely.
But you know, it was important to just be honest with myself. And we all go through periods of greater personal honesty and less. But I think I had enough of a drive because I've got a vocational calling to override bad decisions. You know, because I knew I had this absolute motivation, and that was inexplicable. Like as you know better than most people, I'm from nothing. My father was a club manager who alternated as a taxi driver or worked at a racetrack, and my mum was a steno who ended up in the public service, and we were, you know, outer suburban white collar working class people. And just we didn't know the closest we had to a friend in the arts was a woman who was an adult entertainer who used to lend me dresses for school costume things that were not like the dresses the other girls were wearing.
Oh
And
man, oh my God, another commonality. I don't think we've ever discussed this. The first live performance that I ever saw was in my hometown in Meriden in WA, similar, background to yours, and it was Collars and Cuffs.
loves it.
I
Loves
think I
it.
was like 13 or 14, and me and my aunties and my mum and whoever went saw a fucking strip show. And I loved it. Like the atmosphere and the, oh my God, people do this?
I have been pro sequin from a very young
Yes,
age and
indeed.
pro beading. If there's beading, I'm in. I'm in. I'm holus bolus. Like,
Just to clarify, you mean BEADING, not beating.
yeah,
Yes.
BEAD, beading, beading,
Yes,
not beating.
beating.
No, you
Yes.
know,
Love a
like,
show, girl.
love a show, girl.
Yeah.
Love a bit of RSL late night entertainment. Got to
Yeah, for
say, loud
sure.
carpet and the
Yeah.
smell of a glass ashtray. That's
Yeah.
home to me.
Yeah, totally.
Anyway, so and I wanted to be a playwright, which is completely inexplicable to anyone. And it was like saying, you know, I want to rub the moon on my face. I mean, it was just so random. But I had that calling and I pursued it somehow, not knowing what I was doing, one foot in front of the other, trying to build a career as a writer. And my family were as supportive as they possibly could be with no money and no idea about what I was actually trying to do. My poor dad, like, you know, in the
You've gone
station
to
waiting.
Mars. I
Yeah,
mean,
totally.
literally, it's like I'm going to Mars and I'm going to live in a yurt. Okay,
Yeah.
Van, sure.
Yeah. But you got into marketing. Yeah. And I'm
Yeah.
going to art school. I'm going to art school. So, and because I had that, I always knew that that would require more of a sacrifice and it was going to be harder because I was a bogan, because I had no idea what I was doing, and that I knew that that would entail sacrifices.
Can I join a couple of dots here? Because what I hear is that one of the things we talk a lot on the podcast about is this idea of ripping up the script. You know, that we're handed cultural scripts that simply don't apply to most of us, and some of us turn ourselves inside out trying to fit them. And there's certain something that happens. For some people, it's in their 30s. For most, it's in their 40s or later, where they just go, "Oh, fuck that! Like, I'm ripping it up. I'm doing it my way." And I think that experience of kind of class transition that you and I have both experienced allows you, in a way, it's the first ripping up of the script. It's the
Yeah.
first time where you kind of go, I wasn't meant to go on this path. So if that script's ripped up, maybe I can rip other ones up too. So even though you're in a relationship with a lovely man who loves you and you adore and all that sort of stuff, but you know it's not right. That there's also part of you that's already torn the other one. So you kind of go, I don't actually have to get married to this man.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. And my mother was a big influence because my mum tore up her script as much as she could. So my mum grew up in the same part of Sydney, in the same working class environment, but with fewer options than me. Like, further education was never going to be an option for my mother. She left school at 15. And she could have been, and this was, and mum had gone to convent school because they didn't used to build state schools where Catholics lived in Sydney. And she had received that really full-on traditional Catholic sort of social cultural education, and all of the other girls were getting married when they were 17, 18, and mum just went, nah, big world, things to see, I'm a bit different and I'm going to do my own thing. And my mother was like working three jobs and had like a late night job at the post office and managed to in the mail sorting room, and she was working in an office and doing all kinds of stuff. And she managed to get enough money together to get a ticket on a boat to go to London in the
Amazing.
1960s. And from there, she realized, well, she'd already done this one journey. She could do heaps. I mean, my mother ended up in East Berlin and Switzerland, and then she went to Canada and she met a guy and like almost eloped to Mexico and then went, no, and then went
Good on your
back and
mum.
she just did these amazing things. And she went to Japan, she went to Sri Lanka, like unheard of for a working
And
class
that
mother.
must have affected you. This is a long bow, but I reckon you can handle it. I was watching, of all random things, last night. I hesitate to even name him because of some of the behavior that he's done, but anyway, it's relevant. Kanye West with David Letterman on that show, where his interview show, and he was basically saying that his mother was, and his father as well, were both very, in my language, they were ripping up the script, but well before he was, and that he thought that that was genetic. He's like, this is literally in my body to be someone who goes against the grain, doesn't like groupthink, all that sort of stuff. Now, we can debate Kanye's ideas, I can't be bothered, but you know what I mean? Do you think?
Just so everybody knows, the anti-Semitism is right out. It is bad.
Yeah, not good, among other
Yep.
things,
Yeah,
specifically
among
in
other things. I mean, other
relationship
things he said are also
context.
bad, but that one is kind of a headline bad, but
Headline bad, his treatment of his wife. Anyway,
Oh,
but
yeah.
I'm interested in whether or not you think, did you get that from your mum, like genetically, or do you
No.
think she taught it
No.
to you?
She, because I mean, I don't really go in for that genetic
Yeah, determinism.
inheritance thing.
Yeah.
I had an extremely close relationship with my parents because I was an only child, and I was a really wanted child, which makes a huge difference. Because what happened was my mum went overseas, she was overseas for a very long time. She came back when she was 30. She'd been in a relationship. She had moved to Singapore to be with this guy, got off the plane and no, and realized immediately it was over, and then hung on, and then eventually went, I'm better than this, and came back to Australia. And she went out, the joke was she went to see the movie Waterloo with her brother and his wife. And they went to Redfern RSL, as you would, afterwards. And this guy walked in, and mum saw him immediately and went, "That's the guy." And it was my dad. And my dad was wearing a purple jacket, a purple shirt, and a white tie. And my mother thought he was probably a gangster.
Oh my God. So did
And he was
she
carrying a
think it was?
briefcase as
It
well.
was love at first sight.
Yeah, so this is what's interesting about this story. So mum saw him and just went, "That's the guy." He was with another girl, and mum worked a magic, the other girl disappeared. And they met again like the next day because my dad was working for the TAB and my mother's brother was as well. And they were at the races and mum got the feeling, knew that dad was going to be there and turned up. And, they hit it off. And within 6 days, dad said, "Well, are we getting married or what?" And mum was
Oh,
like,
wow.
but this was the line when bogans meet. And mum went, Isn't it a bit soon?"
Yeah.
And dad just turned to her and went, "Barbara, when you know." And mum agreed. So they were married like within, when would they have met? They were married within like 2 or 3 months.
Wow.
And then they wanted to have a baby and they couldn't have one. So mum had all these problems, and this is long before IVF or anything. And they were just like, they tried and tried and tried. And mum was like, "Look, I may not be able to give you children." And dad was like, "So what? That's the hand we've been dealt. We've got one
Oh,
another."
Dad.
And mum reckons that she got pregnant that night. That night
Oh,
with that
wow.
conversation.
Stop
And so
it. You're
things
like,
were.
I'm getting like goosebumps. Well, I have to say two things. One, you're absolutely terrifying me because every bit of advice that I give on this podcast is like, don't rush in. Don't fucking move in too quick. Don't introduce the kids. Call your jets. Call your jets. Because a lot of people coming back into dating. At my age, I'm a little bit older than you, or even at your age, there's can be a tendency to go, oh, I fucked it up the first time and leap in too quickly. And there can be a whole heap of consequences for that.
Oh,
But
look,
this is a
and
beautiful story.
do you want me to tell you the Ben
Oh no,
story?
I know this story. You saw him across the room at
I
Trades
did
Hall.
literally the same thing with my mother and my dad. Because
See? Maybe it is genetic.
I reached this point. So I had been sober for a long time and I was dating in Melbourne, which is just like going to the zoo. Like it is literally like it's like eating 26 candy bars and or drinking 10 liters of red cordial and going to the zoo. Like this just a terrible experience. And because I'd come out of another long-term relationship with the funniest breakup ever, we had decided we were living together in London. The Tories had got elected, and all the work that we were doing, he was a psychiatric nurse, and I was obviously working in the arts and trying to break into the theatre. And the Tories just cut everything. And we went from having, not a lot of money, but enough to live, to having none. And I ended up working behind a bar and was working really crazy hours and was just, getting groped and spat on and all the things that happen when you work in bars that billionaires go to. And it just fell apart. Like it was another relationship that was based on an ideal of the future as opposed to what was actually happening. And when there were these terrible riots in London in 2010 when we were living there, and I was actually at a friend's house because I had a head injury and my boyfriend didn't really take it seriously. And I was like,
Red
I'm gonna
flag.
I'm going to call Lizzie and go to hospital. And she, that night, we were like trying to go to hospital, and people were like stealing televisions and buildings were on fire and all these riots was
Oh my
like,
God.
and she was like, it seems the appropriate time to tell you, you have to break up with him. Like he's just
Yes.
no good. And I was
Yes.
like, I think you're right. And
Yes.
I'd been offered a job back in Melbourne and well, back in Melbourne, I didn't live in Melbourne, but I'd been offered this amazing job in Melbourne that was a lot more money than I'd been earning, and status and a career pathway working for a theatre company. And we were in, we got back, finally got to see a doctor. We're back in her apartment, and there was a riot crowd coming down the street, breaking windows with a crowbar, and we could hear them.
Wow.
And she said to me, I'm going to boil some oil. We're on the second story, so if they crawl up the building, we can pour oil on them. And I was just like, I'm taking that job and I'm going back to Australia.
Yeah, I'm out.
Just and I when I finally got back to my flat, I said to my boyfriend, I said, I don't want to live here anymore. Like it's
Yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
And you're not like, what are we doing? Like it's
Yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And
Oh, you wouldn't even take me to the ER, fuckhead. We're done.
the nurse wouldn't have me to the ER.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So good luck to your patients, but
Yeah.
I mean, our relationship was in terrible trouble. It's sort of just holding it together kind of thing. And we got to the airport, and so we decided that we would continue to be in a relationship until I got on the plane. Okay, that was completely insane, but we did it. And because you do insane things, and it was just easier, frankly.
Yeah.
And we got to the airport. And I was like, I guess this is it. And he was like, no, I love you. You can't,
Oh
yeah,
God.
I'll come. You can't, we've got to stay together.
The
And I
last
was like,
gasp.
this is what, you know? And so we sort of stayed together for another 6 weeks. And then I think I became the first person to end a relationship over Skype. I don't know,
Right.
but our Skype connection failed. And I just thought, why am I doing this? And we
Yeah.
were having a chat. And it's like, if you're not enthralled in the Skype chat, get out, kind of
Yeah.
thing. But it was one of those momentous moments where it turned out that within a 24-hour period, I had ended a relationship, restarted a relationship, moved to another country, started a new job, and quit smoking, which in the long run was probably a great decision, but at the time was probably a bridge too far.
It's a
But
lot.
when we broke up, I was in Melbourne and I had a sook for several months, and then I started dating again. And then I was just dating too much because it was the whole Tinder
Yeah.
thing where you could just go on 1,000
Oh, I
dates
get
and
it.
you could be bored, and you could, it was like
Yeah.
ordering takeaway. Do I feel
Yeah.
like cooking? Not really,
Yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And sort of reaching this point where it was just a game. The best
Yeah.
thing, that two really great things happened to me, internet dating. One, I met my musical theatre partner, Richard,
Lovely.
because we matched on Tinder because we liked all the same music and had all the same
Yeah.
friends. And we spent months trying to work out why we weren't a really smoking couple, because there
Yeah.
was just no vibe.
Yeah.
And I worked it out. I was like, oh my God, we're music theatre collaborators,
Yeah.
because I love Joanna Newsom and so do
So do
you know,
you.
like.
I've made a couple of friends from online dating. Same thing. Sometimes you just rock up and you really like each other, but it's just not there.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. The problem with Tinder in particular is you meet yourself. Like somebody who knows
Yes.
the people you know and likes the things who you like,
Yes.
that is
Yes.
you.
Yes.
And that's awesome in a music theatre collaboration, can I just
Yeah.
say? Like, and I refer
Yeah.
to Richard as my work husband,
Yeah.
which is what he is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's a very committed relationship.
Yeah.
And he's just one of the most amazing people I've ever met. But this is the other thing, like, you know, just because you match with somebody on paper or through an
Yeah,
algorithm,
no.
that's not the
Yeah.
connection. There are other things you need to feed. And I also met this amazing 23-year-old
No.
who, who a guy called David M. Green, who I'm incredibly good friends with. And I was like, why are you even talking to me? I'm 37. He said, I see you play Scrabble. And I was like, well, yeah, I'm not gonna go on a date with you. He said, frankly, I'm just new to town. I would just really love a Scrabble game. So we met
Oh.
up to play Scrabble and just
That's
ask one
sweet.
another about how dating was going and what was
Yeah.
happening. And we were like bailing on dates to like phoning
Play
one another from
Scrabble.
the bathrooms going, do you want to meet up in Brunswick and play some Scrabble? I'd really.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I can get a cab and be there in 20 minutes. And he'd be like, I've got my travel set. I'll be there, you know, kind of
thing. Love it.
And that was the other brilliant thing that happened. And he and I got to bring Ben to his wedding. And
it's not, that's the thing. Relationships, capital R, it's not all about romance, right? It can be investing in friendships. I tell you what I'm going to do, because clearly, and this was always going to happen, you and I well over time, but we're going to flash forward and then I'm going to get you back on for part two.
Oh my God.
The point at which you walk in to Trades Hall, what age are you?
I'm 39. It's literally the day before I turn 40.
The day before you turn 40, you walk in, you see this man across the room, you're now married to him.
I knew that was going to happen when I saw him. I knew.
Shut the front door.
The really funny thing is, you know, and Ben and I have talked about this, if we had met one another a week earlier or a week later, it might have been a different story. Mm. But I actually attribute building relationships, like my relationship with Richard and my relationship with David, and going, actually, my life's really great. Yes. My life's really great. Yes. So I stopped the sort of frenetic dating because I had built relationships with other people in my life that were meaningful and important and like really solid friendships. And as they partnered up, the people they partnered with became friends of mine too.
And that means you're not starting, like maybe that makes the conditions where you can receive the love of someone like Ben, because you're not starting from a position of desperation, is too strong a word, but you know, that idea of I need someone to sort my life out or complete me or make me feel better. You're starting from, I'm good. What can you add?
Well, yeah, basically. I mean, and by that point, like I said, I had not been dating for a while. Like I'd just gone, actually, I'm good. And I'd reached that point of going, if I never partner with anyone, it's fine, because I love my career and there are all of these great pluses to being on my own.
I'll be okay.
I can control my time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can pursue my interests. I don't have to accommodate anybody else's timetable. Mm. I can travel whenever I want. Like, and I did. Like, I decided I got invited to a conference in Italy and I went, I can go, so I will go.
Yeah, I'll go.
So I had this amazing adventure in Italy, and then I went to visit my best friend in Vienna. And, you know, like, yeah. And that's what a life. Like, that's amazing.
This leads perfectly into our listener call. Are you ready to hear it? Because it's literally, this is the vibe.
Hi, Nelly. So a bit of background about me. I'm 63. I've just divorced my third husband after 31 years of marriage. I live in a non-English speaking country overseas, have been outside Australia for 25 years. I come from Western Australia, lived some of my childhood in Kalgoorlie, so not far from Meriden. I'm very tall, very intelligent, very upfront. How the hell do you think I'm going to go forward with my life now? Any ideas?
I mean, I've got a million. I mean, your life is already amazing.
This is, okay, you tell me what you hear and then I will piggyback on you.
Oh, look, how are you going to go forward? I mean, your life is of infinite potential.
You are going forward.
Well, yeah, like your life is going forward. Your life is going forward, you know. That's one thing you cannot stop, except definitively. And it's just like, if you are a person of curiosity and enthusiasm, the world is limitless. Mm. There's so much to see and to do and people to meet and causes to commit to and justice to fight for and trees to sit under. Somebody, a really good friend of mine, was quoting a Rilke poem yesterday. Where is the Rilke poem? And it's this absolutely glorious meditation on art. I'm going to read it to you. You need to make some chat while I find it.
No, I'll wait for you. Hang on, I'm just
going
to
sort
the dog
out.
Me?
God, I'm going to let the dog out. Okay, so
Go.
this is Irena Maria Rilke. It's Archaic Torso of Apollo. We cannot know his legendary head with eyes like ripening fruit, and yet his torso is still suffused with brilliance from inside, like a lamp in which his gaze, now turned to low, gleams in all its power. Otherwise, the curved breast could not dazzle you so, nor could a smile run through the placid hips and thighs to that dark centre where procreation flared.
Oof.
Otherwise, this stone would seem defaced beneath the translucent cascade of the shoulders and would not glisten like a wild beast's fur, would not from all the borders of itself burst like a star, for here there is no place that does not see you. You must change your life.
Oh, stop. I have a combination of goosebumps and fanny flutters, Van Badham.
Well, this is the thing, like the poem's about how great art inspires growth and inner change. And the friend of mine who sent it to me is this brilliant American writer who suffers from agoraphobia, and it's had a terrible effect on her, like limiting her physical world. And she was like, what do I do? How do I have these moments if I can't go to the Met? And I'm like, Allegri's Mizer, Glenn Gould's performance of Bach's Goldberg Variations, like this infinite, we have never lived in a more culturally rich time where all the treasures of every great civilization are accessible to us. And for me, you know, that's, when my father died, my mother was a widow for 10 years, you know, nursing this grief. And when Dad died, I was single and on my sort of dating train. And my mother, I remember bawling at the dining room table saying, just be aware that this is the price of marriage. This is the price of true love. This grief, insurmountable.
Oh.
And it was a hell of a warning. And it made me think, well, then it's got to be worth it, doesn't it? Like, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And, yes, man. Can we sit with that for a second? That is, to me, that's the key, right? It's, as you know, I've just been through a funeral with beautiful Cal Wilson, and one of her best friends from New Zealand read a beautiful poem, and the gist of it was basically, I will always carry your heart in my heart. And that, like, I can't explain the enormity of that. What connecting that to what you're saying, to me, this is why if you are going to invest in true love, we know the cost of that could come, right?
Yeah.
Either through death or divorce. And it is the risk that you either choose to take or don't. I would say, going back to the listener, there's a couple of possibilities. One is, this is your third divorce. I don't see that as a failure. Like, don't let anyone say to you, oh, you've been married through it, whatever. If you want to get married again, go for it. What I would say, though, just an invitation to consider whether you want to make that investment. Maybe you want to make a different investment. As Van's saying, is it in art? Is it in travel? Is it in your friendships? Do you want to, and I don't mean this in a trite way, I'm not saying you have to play lawn bowls, do you want to find a new skill? You're not done yet, babe. You're 63. You could have another 20, 30 years on the planet. There's plenty of novelists who didn't start writing until that age, or painting or singing or whatever it is. What is it that you actually want out of the rest of your life? Don't tell yourself that has to be another husband. It might not be. You might take lovers.
Well, my mum was 71 when Dad died.
Yeah.
And my mother's next 10 years were about music and art and all the things that she was interested in. And going through her house and sort of sorting, I found the most extraordinary collection of music programs, Brandenburg Orchestra and the Australian Opera, and just, you know, public talks that she'd go to and demos that she went to. And my mother had this unbelievable group of friends, the little gang, and they shared these experiences with her, and they had these amazing adventures. And even when my mother got sick and was physically incapable of leaving the house, my mother was obsessively listening to ABC Jazz and ABC Classical and watching the news and engaging and staying part of life, like, to the end.
And whatever, you know, it is for you, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to share with you, I mean, this is quite vulnerable, but I think it's important to reciprocate that vulnerability with the caller. I have this vision. If I am single at 63, this is so embarrassing, but it's also beautiful. I have this vision that I will have an apartment in the CBD in Melbourne, because my love affair with Melbourne will not end, and that I will be a Gertrude Stein van. I will be hosting salons, having dinner parties, going to the theatre when I can, walking around the botanical gardens. If that's me on my own, that is a beautiful vision. If that's me with someone that I love and adore, that's also a beautiful vision. Neither have more weight for me.
Oh, well, this is the thing. I mean, my mother obsessively loved the Sydney Swans. Sometimes were disturbing. There was a shrine incident, which was a bit difficult to deal with. But this is the thing. Like, it was about where is the centre of your joy, and where do you love your own company the most? Like, I'm really grateful that I spent so much time traveling on my own. Like, I really learnt to love my own company and to, you know, I have a very strong inner compass.
Yeah.
And can find where I, what I need to see and where I need to go, and have that sense of confidence in a new city that I can orient myself. And
you can learn.
I'm not going to say there weren't lonely times on the road. But it's a learned skill. It really is. And it's the most liberating.
Yeah.
You know, I think of those months before I met Ben and how I had accumulated all of these experiences, made all of these decisions, and then finally knew what my life was, and I was content.
Yeah.
And there were happier days and there were sadder days, because life is like that.
Yeah.
But a fundamental sense of contentment.
There are in relationships too.
Yeah.
I think that's important as well.
Well, so, I wouldn't give him back, frankly, Nellie.
No, of course you wouldn't, bless. But for our caller, don't trick your brain into thinking the only way that my life can move forward is if I find the next husband. That is simply not true. There's plenty of people at your age and older on their own. Maybe they take lovers, maybe they don't. Maybe they're out, maybe they're not. You get to decide what the rest of your life looks like. And if there's something that you've always wanted to do that you were scared to do, do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do it. When else are you going to do it? Do it now.
And, you know, I've got to say, one of the greatest senses of joy you'll ever have is in that minute after you've conquered a fear.
100%.
You know, and that's extraordinary. You know, I used to be scared of dogs. Do you know this?
Yes, yes.
And so I got myself locked in a dingo enclosure, which was really terrifying, but I wanted to face down that fear, and the dingoes didn't eat me, even though my brain was telling me they were definitely going to eat me.
Yep.
And I walked out, and it was like rebirth. It was like this amazing sense of ownership. You know, it was like buying a house. Like, I was less excited about buying a house than I was about triumphing over my fear of dogs. Yeah. And it's those kind of...
those things, and they're never done. There's always something. So I don't know if you know this, but I started doing, after wanting to do it for 30 years, I started doing drag last year.
I love it.
And I'm like, I can't do it. Like, I'm too old. I'm too fat. I don't move well enough. I'm not skilled. Like, I'm used to being in work situations that I know I'm good at, where I'm in control. This felt completely out of control, and it was the best thing I could have done, because I'm not perfect at it. But I fucking love it. And it just elevated me. It's an elevated version of me. So therefore it elevates me.
You know what's interesting? Like, I think we're having these conversations with a sense of like wonder and amazement.
Yeah.
Because frankly, the cultural document yeah. did not provide women with these stories
absolutely
or
not.
These opportunities. And I think we have to be very clear that we are living in the shadow of patriarchal traditions that didn't reward or celebrate the fearlessness of women or the independence of women. Mm. And it is interesting watching Mad Men and watching these relationships that the characters get into that are obviously based on the memories of the writers writing about their parents is quite clear, you know, and movies like Revolutionary Road and that, you know, that was my parents' generation and your parents' generation and these sort of messages that we had about what life should look like according to who. And this is the thing, like the idea that happiness is going to be tied up in a partner. You can have a really happy relationship with a partner. And I am super pro-marriage as long as it's a marriage that's really truly based on the meeting of minds, which, you know, has happened to me, which is great. But I would have been infinitely more unhappy badly partnered than I ever would have been on my own. I would have been happy on my own. And that's sort of...
Babe, we see it all the time. We see it all the time, even in our age group who supposedly post-feminist. We see it all the time. We see people in marriages that are miserable because it's not culturally acceptable to leave, even though we can still do it. We can do it now. You can get your bank account. You know, the structures are easier, not perfect, but easier. But there's still a cultural pressure, and there is on our caller to kind of go, 63, you're done. You're not done. Fuck that. As Van said, this is, think of it as a shadow of patriarchy and rip it up.
Yeah.
Rip it up. Move into the light if you need that metaphor. You get to choose.
Yeah, be the cultural narrative you'd want the women who came after you to read.
Yes.
You know? Like, and the world is just so exciting and random. And, you know, every single place on this planet, like the bleakest, darkest place, is beautiful if you look at it through that lens of curiosity and enthusiasm. And they're I think they're the most important, you know, next to kindness and empathy, the most important qualities to cultivate: curiosity and enthusiasm,
and
just being able to look at, you know, the way the light hits the edge of a roof in an industrial building, or, you know, like a pigeon dances on an urban street, or a flower blooms, or any of those things, you know, and these, the moments of great art, whether it's visual or dance or anything else, or sport, that speak to these, you know, moments of distilled perfection. That's the marrow, man. Like,
that's the marrow. And I think lean into the positives. So the positives of being single, the main positive I think is freedom. So let's say, I'll give you a concrete example. Let's say you really love cocktails or mocktails. When you're 63, you love cocktails or mocktails. If you had a partner, you'd have to negotiate this on your own. You can go, right, I'm going, if you've got the means, I'm going to go to 5, 6, 10, 20 places and try that cocktail or that mocktail. And that is my adventure. I'm going to do it once a year for the next 10 years. Whatever it is, you have the freedom to do that in a way that a lot of partnered people don't. The reason I say that is because I think all we hear is the negatives, like you're going to be lonely, you're going to be on your own, you haven't got someone there on your birthday or whatever. But what are the positives? You can also walk into a shop, decide when you leave, decide when you go, you know, like you, that freedom is also to be cherished. And that's not to shit on couples. That's to say there's positives and negatives in both situations.
You know, when I broke up with my English boyfriend when I came to Melbourne, I decided I was never going to own a brown couch ever again.
Yeah.
That was a hard and fast rule. I was like, I do not want a brown couch made of corduroy that stinks of incense sticks and cigarette smoke and ex-girlfriend. Like, that is just, and you know what I did, Nelly? Something you could never do in a relationship: white furniture. I bought so much white furniture and patchwork quilts, and I filled the house full of flowers. And I just, you know, and it was, there are opportunities available to you when you're only accountable to yourself.
And they're liberating. For one day, being able to have white shag carpet.
Oh, wow.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine my little salon?
You know, Ben and I bought a couch. We have to buy a new couch. And obviously I picked the colour. I think we all know it's green. By the way, it's actually deep. It's a deep rainforest teal. But it was the most extraordinary experience because it was really like that's marriage, because he's 6'1" and I'm 5'2".
Yeah.
And if he can sit on a couch without his knees going to his ears, my feet won't reach the ground.
Yeah.
And it was this like interminable, it was like being on a reality television show. In fact, there's a pitch. It's called Couch. And it's just couples buying a couch.
Buying a couch.
And I said to the guy in the store, do people fight here? And he was like, everyone fights here. This is what happens. Yeah. And just the number of negotiations required around this couch and this process of negotiation. And I think that we have a couch that, you know, like is not my ideal couch and maybe not his. I mean, it is deep rainforest teal. Yeah. But, you know, if you're on your own, you can buy and you're buying a couch, buy the couch.
She can go and buy the pair of lips couch if she wants to.
In white.
Right, in white. She can do whatever she wants. And please call back and let us know if you've made any plans like that, because I'd love to hear like concrete examples of things where you kind of go, all right, this is my pivot. All right, we're going to finish up on my two favorite segments, No Shade on My Ex, where I absolutely encourage you to shade an ex fan. You can go as superficial or as deep as you like. And there are 10 buts. So if you're on a date with a guy, imagine yourself dating. If you're on a date with a guy and he was like a hot and tot hottie, but he did something where you went, absolutely not, I'm out.
Okay. So I loved the band Faith No More.
Oh, yeah.
All through high school. Loved them. Absolutely defined myself by this love, by my love of this band. Gorgeous. And so did my best friend.
Yeah.
And we were both so into them. And we like knew all the words, all the songs, and would go on beach holidays and sing them together in the water in the middle of the night, when we, you know, that kind of thing. And when I was at university, I was reviewing bands for the student newspaper, and I got golden tickets to the Faith No More tour, right?
Oh.
Absolutely golden tickets. And I was like, I'm going to take my best friend and we're going to have a good time. But I had this very good-looking dopey boyfriend at the time, and I knew that the protocol was that I would have to ask him.
Oh, no.
And I did. And he went, yeah, I think they're kind of crap, but, yeah, like, I guess they're free tickets and we'll get free drinks.
Oh.
And I was just like, okay, all right, this can't be happening. Surely he will cancel. But he didn't. And he also turned up to the gig from work. And by this stage, he'd got a job at an insurance company. And I remember what he was wearing. He was wearing like a red sweater and a collared shirt. And you can imagine what I look like. Like I've got a pair of cut off camo pants and steel cap boots and like 20 like sets of beads. And
you're bloody tank girl.
I'm just like, yeah, I am tank girl at this point in my life. And I'm just like, okay, all right, sure. And he's just misery for the whole gig, like absolute misery. Fuck. And this is when stage diving is still legal, and I want to get up the front, but he thinks it's ridiculous and just
what a buzzkill.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have backstage passes, and then he's like, "Oh, I didn't speak to this girl." Right, the whole thing, and I'm like, "Fine." And we're leaving, and I run into the popular girl from high school, and she's there because we're all there because we're all obsessed with
Yeah. Animal.
And I'm like, oh, hi. And she's with the other girls from high school. They're still a pack.
Yeah.
And she's like, what are you doing here? And I went, and I got to go, oh, well, actually, I have these, like, backstage passes and golden tickets because I'm a music journalist now.
Mm.
And, and this is my boyfriend. And I'm really trying hard not to say his name. And, yeah, this is my boyfriend. These are the girls from school. Yeah, and I said, so what are you doing now? And she was like, oh, I'm a beautician. And I knew for a fact she was a mortician, so I really thoroughly enjoyed this piece of news. And she was like, oh, well, I guess I'll see you around. And I went, yeah. And she was like, enjoy your backstage passes. And I was like, oh, yeah, we will. We weren't going to. We're going to go home. Anyway, the crowd sort of surged between us, and we disappeared in the crowd, but I could still hear her. And she went, just was that Vanessa Bottom? Oh, my God. Her boyfriend's really good looking. I don't understand. she totally wasn't popular at high school.
Oh my
God. And then I had that moment of going, thank you, boyfriend. Your role in my life has come to an end. And I broke up with him. I was like,
that's you may have been a buzzkill, but you were a bit of arm candy for the school bully.
Yeah. I mean, he was like seriously hot, but I was just like, you
Hot's
know,
not enough at this age.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not enough. It's not even starting line.
No, it's not. You know? And we learned this is one of the delightful things about dating older, where you go, that shit is so irrelevant, right? Like, of course there has to be sexual chemistry, but it is not, who gives a shit? If someone's going to buzzkill my Melissa Etheridge concert, they're not welcome. You know what
I'm
saying?
I just remember that night was excruciating, and it taught me so many lessons. Like, I just should have called my best friend, and she would have been like, oh my God, you know,
yes.
She
would have been one of the best. You would have had the time of your life.
Yeah.
All right, now here's a 10, but you're sitting on a date, everything's perfect, you think everything's going great, and then he does something. Do not make it he's rude to the waiters, because everyone says that and that's an absolute deal breaker. What's something? Make it superficial as you can. That's hard for a Van Badham, but superficial.
I remember, very nice man, like, you know, impressive job, great credentials, met online, went to a very nice restaurant. He was very charming, and then during the meal took food off my plate.
Without asking. Ooh.
Yeah.
No.
And I was just like, you know, there's a boundary issue. There's a boundary issue, and I'm not cool with it.
Is this a first date?
This is a first date.
So you're like a couple.
He used chopsticks to take a wonton from my plate.
From your plate without asking?
From my plate without asking.
Yeah, and no, off you fuck.
And he could see it in my face. Yeah. He knew that, and he was like, oh, was that all right? I was like, oh, yeah, except it wasn't.
On a first date.
On a first date.
Couples do that.
I think he just freaked out. To be fair, in retrospect, he hadn't been single he'd come out of a long-term relationship. I'd come out of a long-term relationship. We're both very awkward. But I was like, nah. You know, the funniest one I ever met on Tinder was a guy who turned up, and the first thing he said to me was, what on earth are you wearing? And I was like, see ya, and just spun and walked.
Good.
And that was very empowering. I tell you something funny though, my Tinder picture used to be me in a ball gown with a goat.
Oh.
And which I thought was a great picture because it sort of says everything. And Ben remembers seeing that picture and going, that chick looks like a loon.
Oh, fantastic. She looks like a handful. Excellent. Oh, I love that. And can I say, on a serious, semi-serious note, I think it's a really important thing for people listening to remember. If you show up on a date, especially if you're doing like a Tinder date or something, and someone is overtly rude, which saying to you, you know, what are you wearing? That's clearly overtly rude. You do not have to stay. You pick up your shit and you leave.
I didn't even have time to put my shit down. I literally walked in. And can I just say, I looked amazing. I was wearing a black bowler hat and this beautiful black woolen frock coat.
Adorable.
And it was a windy, wet Melbourne day.
Yeah,
right?
Gorgeous.
And I looked super cute. And I got from some guy in jeans and a T-shirt.
Yeah. What are you wearing? Also, even if you didn't like your outfit, don't say it. Like, if that's the first thing you say to someone, imagine what he's going to be saying in a month.
It was hilarious. I just thought, I work in the theatre. You know, I can get a lot weirder than this, buddy. And, you know, some people would think that was exciting and fun.
You're lucky I didn't show up in my normal outfits. I was trying to turn it down for you.
Yeah.
Oh, gorgeous. Oh, now, Van Badham, will you come back on and tell us the Ben story?
I will. I've really been yapping. It's you.
Yeah, that's what we do.
I can't stand it.
I know. This is what we do. I knew this is how it would go, and I love it, but I want to get the full Ben story when we've got more time. You are adorable. I have adored you for many, many years. You're so
thoughtful. Like the way I dress, right? Like, that's
I love the way. You're hot as fuck, mate. Come on. Look at you. You're a vision. But I love your columns, your work, everything, so thoughtful. And I mean it. I'm going to come to Sydney and see your play.
I would be so honoured.
Our caller, this is the kind of thing that I'm going to myself, right, just give yourself a little, I don't do New Year's resolutions, but I'm going 2024, that can be my treat for myself. That's Nellie's little treat.
And we will have a fun time.
Oh, you best believe.
Yeah, like, I mean, the world's amazing.
It is.
Amazing. Yeah. Do you know what the other great thing about being in the arts is? You learn how to have an amazing time with absolutely no money.
100%.
You know, like, yes. I did not earn a dollar and for the vast majority of my career.
Yeah.
I still don't earn what other middle-class people earn.
No, now we're both bar bitches.
I always thought class transition would come with, I don't know.
Yeah, money.
More cars or something. But, but it's that thing. It's like knowing the most valuable commodity on earth is an adventure.
Guess what they don't take at Cafe Sydney's payment? Cultural capital. But we'll try. We'll try.
But you can, but you know, if you're so inclined, you can still drink goon from a bag on the foreshore of Sydney Harbour. And, you know, that
is. You sure can. You sure can. I love you, Van Badham.
I love you too. I miss you.
I miss you too. I will see you in Sydney.
Oh my God, amazing.
Bye, darling.
Dear Nellie, I could use some advice, dear Nellie. Yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nellie. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nellie. There's a lot to explore, dear Nellie. When you're 40 or more, dear Nellie. So I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nellie. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly, to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous.